morning. This broadcast of Finding Fairways was pre-recorded and is a production of Blarney Stone Broadcasting. On this week's episode of Finding Fairways, my co-host Kevin Frisch and myself, Jerry Coyne, will talk with Jeff Roth, who won his third Pro-Pro event earlier this month with our co-host Dan Pohl. Jeff also has an invitation to Harding Park for the PGA this year. Later on, we will talk to Gary D'Amato from the Milwaukee Journal, who has a lot of inside information on the cancellation of the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits and what's going on the PGA Tour right now and the emergence of Bryson DeChambeau. That's all coming up next here on Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Good morning, Michigan golfers. Welcome to Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne in studio with my original co-host, Kevin Frisch. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Jerry.
Have you recovered from Bryson DeChambeau-itis?
My back hurts just by watching him. I mean, it has been unbelievable watching this guy hit a golf ball. Brings back memories of watching Tiger back in the early 2000s.
It's even adds to the craziness and the thrill, as both of us have played that golf course a number of times. And at first, you know, you're trying to figure out, they changed up the golf. They added one hole from the south course and changed the holes around a little bit. Where he and Wolf and some of these other guys were hitting the golf ball just made it insane.
It's crazy. Yeah. And what's the most impressive about it is how straight he's hitting it.
Yeah.
And that's what's interesting. That's what's going to be interesting when we start getting into these majors and what he can do and where he's hitting it.
Well, plus the fact that he's played very well. I mean, he's averaging, 18 under in the first four tournaments of the year.
Right.
I mean, he was in the hunt in every single event that he's played in. He's had one bad round. He's only had one round in the 70s.
Right.
So it's not like he's just, me hit ball.
Right, exactly. He's doing the other things. I mean, I was pulling up his stats today. You know, he's second in strokes gained off the tee, which we were talking, you want to know who first is. So it's funny, but he's 12th in strokes gained putting, so he's right there. So if he continues to drive it well, and if he can dial in his wedges, he could really do something special.
And the tour is moving into, they started off with these tight golf courses, and now they're moving into more of a bomber type golf course. So, I mean, it wouldn't be unreasonable to think that DeChambeau could win another couple of times before, even in this truncated season.
I totally agree, and I think it's going to be interesting when we get to the majors to see how his game goes to those courses, and when the rough gets deep and the fairways get narrow. But as straight as he's hitting it,
he's hitting it awfully straight. You know, let's just face facts. Colonial, he was in the hunt, and Harbortown you got to figure out the angles. So, I mean, Wingfoot, we saw what happened to Phil and not hitting it straight and everything else. So that will be something that we will look at and discuss going forward in the year. There's been a couple of interesting things going on, and we're touching on a whole bunch of subjects, folks, during this week's show. So stay with us if we're being a little ADD. But I was telling Kevin, at the member at Oakland Hills a few weeks ago, Kevin, they had back-to-back hole-in-ones on the same par three. Billy O'Connor, who's a friend of mine, had played high school golf at Brother Rice and is a very, very fine player, hit it into the hole, and the next swing by the next player on the same hole, one hop and stop into the hole.
That's amazing.
Amazing.
That doesn't happen. The odds on that are
17 million to one.
That's unbelievable. That's insane.
And another guy had a hole-in-one on a different hole during the same event, so Bart Tab was outrageous at Oakland Hills.
I can only imagine. Yeah. In some other news, too, we've got to mention this. In the Michigan Girls Junior State Amateur, 17-year-old Ariel Chang shoots 62.
Where was that?
She's a Utica Eisenhower student, and it was at Forest Acres East. Which is a good golf course. Yeah. I mean, it's not what the West is, but it's a good golf course. And I don't care what level you are, shooting 62, 9
How
under
old
par,
is she?
She's 17 years old. Impressive.
That is very impressive. There's been a lot of impressive stuff in golf. I got to give a tip of the cap to the PGA Tour for how well they have managed this COVID situation. You know, some players testing positive, isolating them, changing the policy on the fly.
Yeah.
Testing guys, finding out they're good, getting back in there. Webb Simpson did that.
Right. Yep. They're doing a great job. Fantastic job. I think it was the smart call, too, to decide not to have fans this week. Just keep going with that and just see where it goes. you know, and well, see how, you know, there's some spikes in cases here and there, but just let's see what happens.
They don't need to put the infrastructure in. We'll talk to Gary D'Amato, and he talked about going out to Whistling Straits, and they hadn't put any of the stanchions in. I don't think they have to. I mean, even if they open it up to the fans, let's say for the U.S. Open in September in upstate New York or outside of New York City, they'll allow some people on there. They don't need to have stands. You know, you can let 7, 8,000, 10,000 people into your golf course and practice some pretty easy social distancing.
Totally agree. It'll be interesting to see. And I don't think it's done anything to TV coverage. I think TV coverage has been pretty good.
I think they've done a great job, even with the guys not on site.
Right, exactly. It's an interesting format on how they're doing it, but it's working.
Keep playing. It's keeping me sane watching professional golf on TV.
And let's give a shout out to all Michigan golfers, because golf is on the rise. People are playing everywhere. They're getting out. We're hearing great stories about how their golf courses are packed, and it's awesome. And summer's here.
It's great. It's great here in northern Michigan. When we return, we'll have a conversation with Gary D'Amato from the Milwaukee Journal about what happened with the cancellation of the Ryder Cup. All brought to us by carlsgolfland.com here on Finding Fairways. It's time to check in with our good friends at carlsgolfland.com. Tim Coyle's on the phone. And Tim, I guess Carl's is driving forward into the 21st century with brand new technology, huh?
Yeah, we sure are. We're really excited to soft announce the opening of the new carlsgolfland.com website. It's been up. If you've head over there recently, you've noticed a little bit of a cosmetic change potentially.
What are some of the features that the users at carlsgolfland.com are going to find?
The nice thing about the new website is you should be very familiar with all of the same features and policies. From the free shipping promotions with $50 to the free returns, everything's going to be very familiar in terms of, you know, those types of features. It's supposed to be a more streamlined process, really. We want to get customers in and out as fast as we can without having to jump through a bunch of hoops. We have even more customizable options in balls and clubs as well.
As we're in the middle of the golf season, some people might be looking at the PGA Tour and thinking, I can get some more distance. Well, you can do that with a new driver at Carl's.
It's crazy the amount of distances you're seeing there on tour. Every year it seems like they keep getting further and further. But, yeah, there's some great new drivers out there that they've taken another step forward yet again. And, yeah, those guys are really putting some great numbers out there this year.
Yeah, and you can always test drive a number of drivers when you get to the Carl's Golfland location in Bloomfield Hills or at St. John's.
You know, we'll make sure to do whatever we can to get you taken care of. And, yeah, try it before you buy it here at our two stores. We have literally demo of anything you can buy off the shelf here, so you know exactly what you're getting yourself into.
One of the great of many great things about carlsgolfland.com. Tim, have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us. By carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne and Kevin Frisch in our Grayling studios, and Gary D'Amato, noted golf journalist out of Milwaukee, is joining us on the phone. Kev, you've known Gary for quite some time.
Gary is the one of the top golf writers in the country for many, many years, and the longtime golf writer for the Milwaukee Journal, and probably the man behind the scenes and probably knows more about the Ryder Cup coming to Whistling Straits than anybody. And we thought, you know, having Gary on and talking a little bit about the events of what's happened the past couple of days with the Ryder Cup being postponed. So, Gary, you were probably on the press conference call yesterday and probably was behind the scenes with everything rolling up to it. How did everything go yesterday? And tell us a little bit about what some of the reasonings were. And
it really came as no surprise. This has been speculated about for weeks that the Ryder Cup would be postponed one year. Some newspapers in Europe reported weeks ago that that it would be postponed, and we sent a guy from our staff up to Whistling Straits about a week ago just to kind of check out the grounds, and there was no infrastructure, no signs that any infrastructure was going up. So, you know, 13, 14 weeks out, when you don't see any grandstands or corporate chalets being built, that was a pretty good red flag that we were going to have a postponement. So it was not surprising news, disappointing certainly, but the hope is that, you know, when the Ryder Cup does come back to Whistling Straits in September of 2021, they can put 40,000 spectators on the grounds, which wouldn't have been possible this year.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think Whistling Straits is going to be an amazing venue for the Ryder Cup. I'm sure you agree with that, Gary. But it seemed for a while now, especially the Europeans, saying, why would we have a Ryder Cup without fans? And that seems to be the overwhelming circumstances on why they've pushed it back another year, correct?
Yeah, I would definitely say that's the overriding reason that they pushed it back. And it's funny, you know, 40, 45 years ago, you couldn't give away tickets to the Ryder Cup. Nobody, there were no spectators at the Ryder Cup. And, you know, Europe got good. Seve Ballesteros came along, and Nick Faldo and Bernhard Langer and that crew, and started beating the Americans. And suddenly it became this heated rivalry. And now it's one of the toughest tickets in sports. The 200,000 tickets were sold in a random lottery earlier this year and sold out in about an hour. So that shows what the demand is and was and will continue to be for this this ticket.
And that's one of the tough things, too, about, you know, with Whistling Straits right there, there's not a lot of parking. There would have been
there's
having
not
a
lot of hotels.
A lot of shuttles, yep. A lot of busing, and putting a lot of people on that, which I'm sure was a major concern under the situation.
Yeah, that and the fact that, you know, the European the Ryder Cup really isn't a Ryder Cup, even in America, without European fans who add so much to the atmosphere.
I agree.
With their singing and chanting and the costumes they wear. And with the quarantines and international travel and everything right now, it wouldn't have been fair to the European team to not be able to have any fans, even if it was only 20% of the crowd. But with no European fans in the crowd or very few, it wouldn't have been the same thing. And then again, even with an all U.S. crowd, you still can't put that many people shoulder to shoulder on a golf course right now with what's going on with coronavirus.
Well, they just decided not to allow any fans in at Memorial, which they were going to try, to put 8,000 down at Jack's Place.
Yeah.
It's funny, very briefly, Gary, what you were talking about. I was at the Ryder Cup at Jack's Place the first time Europe won on American soil. Somebody had told me, hey, we should go to this Ryder Cup. It's supposed to be pretty cool, because he was down in the one in Florida 4 years prior where the Europeans almost won. And there was just one stanchion on the first tee and the 18th green, and there was maybe 6 or 7,000 people walking around at Muirfield for that Ryder Cup, where, you know, when Faldo and Woosnam and all those guys finally started becoming known to the golfing world.
It's really interesting to see where it's gone from there to,
oh yeah,
I was at Hazeltine a few years ago, and that was just a crazy scene on the first tee with a big horseshoe-shaped grandstand, and I don't know, there must have been 15,000 people at least packed into that grandstand. And I've told people that I think the beginning of the Ryder Cup, the first tee shot on Friday morning, that's as exciting a moment as anything I've seen in sports. I mean, I think the Indianapolis, the start of the Indy 500 is, you know, raises the hair on the back of your neck with 200,000 fans standing and, you know, the cars screaming down the straightaway at 200 miles an hour. That's pretty cool. But, you know, there's few moments like that in sports, and I think the Ryder Cup, the very start of it on Friday morning, it ranks right up there with among the best atmospheres in sports, I believe.
Oh, I would definitely agree with that. I was at the Ryder Cup back in 2002 at the Belfry, the last one that was at the Belfry.
Wow.
And actually got up really early and got out there and got on the first tee. And it wasn't the scene. I mean, it was a great scene then, but it wasn't what it is today. But there was major electricity and the fans. And it is an experience if you can get that first tee or on Friday morning.
The Europeans, you're absolutely right, Gary. I didn't even consider the fact that they couldn't travel. When the Ryder Cup was at Oakland Hills, I ended up falling in with a whole bunch of Irish guys that had come over a week early. You know, they come over early, they play in the Midwest, and then they go. And some people, they plan that vacation for 2 years.
Oh, yeah. You think about what's going on with the quarantine right now. They would have to quarantine for 2 weeks once they got to the States. And then they would have to, you know, when they went home, they would have to quarantine for 2 weeks. So you're talking about a month of your life to watch, you know, 3 or 4 days of golf. It doesn't make sense. So, you know, there were going to be no fans or very few fans from Europe. So, you know, I think that's one of the major considerations. Plus just, You know, the PGA of America even hired an infectious diseases expert, sort of an advisory capacity, and reached out to even the Green Bay Packers to see how they were going to handle, games at Lambeau Field this fall. And, I mean, they had so much, they really consulted with everybody, that, you know, public officials in the state of Wisconsin, medical scientists, everybody, and just, you know, came to the overwhelming conclusion that they just could not hold it this year out of safety concerns. And I think the players were fine with that, because you can't play a Ryder Cup without fans. It just wouldn't have been the same. You know, Brooks Koepka even talked about possibly there being a boycott if they tried to go ahead and hold it without fans. I don't know if it would have come to that, but it just goes to show the sentiment of the players that they want the fans there too.
Yeah, I know we're going to talk about what's going on the PGA Tour in our next segment, but I do have one last question about the Ryder Cup, Gary. So what happens with the team now? Now, do these guys hold their – is it a place card holder for them? I mean, the team could drastically switch with points adding in another year.
It definitely could and probably will. I agree with you 100%. You know, I think it just gives a chance for some of these young players, Colin Morikawa, Matthew Wolf. You can go up and down the list of, you know, there's an exciting group of players, you know, between the ages of 22 and 26, I think, who now have a chance to accrue more points and make this team. And when you look at the makeup of the team that Steve Stricker's going to have, there's a very good possibility it could be by far the longest, you know, hitting team in Ryder Cup history. When you think of Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau, what he's doing with the golf ball right now, and Tony Finau and Gary Woodland. I mean, there are going to be a bunch of mash. It's going to be like the 27 Yankees, murderer's row.
Well, you know, and this is leads up to, I wish we had more time to talk about this, but I don't know if Whistling Straits is the ideal course for Bombers.
You know, it depends what Steve Stricker does to the course. I talked to one source who said he's going to turn one of the par fives into a long par four, so par will be 71. And, you know, he can manipulate the landing areas. He can tighten them at 280 yards where, you know,
good,
the Europeans will be flying their ball. And then he can widen them at 330 and let Brooks Koepka and DeChambeau blast away. So I think there's ways to manipulate the golf course a little bit that will favor the Americans. At least that's what the hope is.
Well, they better, because the last event in Paris was well thought out by the Euros and didn't really lend to the length that the Americans have. When we return here on Finding Fairways, we're going to talk to Gary D'Amato about what's going on with Bryson DeChambeau and some of the things that the tour is experiencing with COVID and no fans. That's when we're back here on your local network. It's all brought to us by CarlsGolfland.com. By soon to become legendary Michigan golfer Jeff Roth. JR, you're down at the Wingate today to play in another event.
Yes, we're playing in the senior junior today at the Wingate. Tee off at 11:30, and my partner is Dan Pohl. He's a super senior. I'm a senior.
Yeah, you were telling me that yesterday. I love that story that Pohl is moved up. He's in age 65 now, makes him a super senior. And he gets to play shorter tees than you, is that right?
Yeah, my tees will be about 6,500. His tees will be about 6,100.
How are the...
I went around yesterday, played a little practice just because I like to see what the conditions are like. And he's going to have a lot of five irons off the tee.
It's a good thing he hits his irons really nicely.
Jeff, did I hear you guys?
No, I'm just saying that even though the course on the card is very short, there's a bunch of holes where even I'm hitting a non-driver club off the tee. And, you know, it's like I told my buddy yesterday, I would rather play for 6,900 yards where I can just get up there with a driver and not worry about anything but making contact. And, you know, you have to come to some of these holes and actually plan out where you want your ball to finish up, and that takes a little bit of thinking, and I don't like to think.
No, absolutely. A lot of times that makes you think even more when you have to start hitting five irons, three irons off the tee, trying to place the ball versus just freewheeling it.
Yeah, it'll just be a little, it'll take a little patience today. And, you know, Dan's been there, done that, so I don't think that's going to be an issue.
Well, the bottom line again is hitting greens and making putts, and you guys excel at that. So I heard you guys defended again in the Pro. Tell us about that.
We did. Yeah, I was at Egypt Valley last week. And, you know, of course, Egypt Valley is a tremendous golf course and really good conditions. And, you know, we kind of struggled on the first nine, and then we played well on the second nine. And then we kind of struggled a little bit on the third nine. And we made the turn for the last nine. And Dan says, we got to make six birdies on this back nine. And I'm thinking along the same lines. And so we ended up birding six out of the first seven holes on our final nine, and couldn't make another birdie coming in. But fortunately, it was good enough to win by one. We shot 65-64.
That's amazing. Tell us a little bit about that mental approach. When you make the turn and you tell yourself you've got to make six birdies in nine holes, what are you guys thinking about? Is it just firing at every flag? Is it, you know, when you're looking at putts? Tell us a little bit about the mental side of that.
You know, it's basically just trying to string one shot together with another one. You know, most people think, well, yeah, you know, go out there and make some putts. But it's just basically trying to string one good shot after another. You string one good and then another one and then a third one. And then before you know it, you're stringing a bunch of good shots in a row, just like you can go the other way. Have a couple bad shots in a row, and then you try to do something that you can't do to be a hero. And so it's really just trying to manage one shot at a time and do the best you can with the conditions. So it's not always firing at flags. Sometimes it's just getting it on the green and maybe making a two-putt birdie and moving on, trying to gather some momentum one shot at a time.
Well, on top of that victory, JR, at the same time or right around that time, you got a notification from the PGA that you're going to be playing at this year's PGA at Harding Park. That had to be awfully exciting.
I just can't even tell you how exciting it is. It's going to be an emotional trip back there because who knows, this probably the last, I'm sure the last one with the kids, but you know, to go back and play in 20 majors spanning, you know, I think my first major was 1991 '88 when Sluman won at Oak Tree. That was my first PGA. So
I remember that,
you know, the 80s and 2000s and you know, didn't get to play in the 2010s, but now in 2020s, I'm playing in another major. It's just mind-boggling.
I remember that Oak Tree one. On day one, your name was on the first page of the leaderboard for about a half an hour.
Yeah. It was a long, long time.
That's ago. A lot. That's bad.
You know, Jerry's memories about his.
I played a practice round with Dan and Joey Sindelar and Payne Stewart.
Right.
That's when Dan was, you know, right in the prime of his career and playing great, especially in majors. And so he set this practice round up. He said, just show up. I'll set us up with some with some players. And he did.
That sounds like our buddy Dan Paul. You know, Jeff Roth we're on the phone with. Jeff, you were supposed to have an exemption into Rocket Mortgage. And that old style golf course, I thought suits your game pretty well. But after seeing what Bryson DeChambeau and the others did to it, you were telling me on the phone earlier, you thought maybe getting to 500 to make the cut would have been a chore.
Well, you know, it's still a long golf course, even though it probably played really fast. And, you know, I'm sure I could have gotten to 500 par, but it's not like I get up to 500 par on that level of competition on a regular basis. So it would have been a huge victory for me to make a cut on the PGA Tour, you know, at my age. So
sure,
I'll get another shot at it next year. The tour took away the exemption this year just because they were trying to make spots for their PGA Tour members.
And, right.
Michigan PGA has been nice enough to roll it over into next year, so I'll get another chance next year.
Jeff, what do you think about Bryson DeChambeau and this muscling up and pounding the ball? You know, Kevin and I were talking about this as we were setting up the show, and it's historically documented. A lot of guys, great players, have tried to do different things to get longer and for the most part destroyed their games. I mean, the Curtis Stranges and Ian Baker Finch, for example. But DeChambeau has seemed to figure it out. He's hitting it straighter and longer.
Yeah, well, and you know, I tip my hat to him because I know it takes an awful lot of hard work to increase your club head speed and get stronger and faster. And the thing that you have to remember about getting stronger and faster is it's all relative. You know, the average guy kind of goes into it thinking about the Bryson DeChambeaus and the Tiger Woodses and the Dustin Johnsons of the world, and that's just not palatable. I mean, if you're swinging the club with a driver at 85 miles an hour, and if you can get to 89 miles an hour, that's a huge gain. And the average guy just doesn't appreciate that, you know.
Right.
I swing my driver at 95, 96 miles an hour. Earlier in the spring, I was down to like 91, 92. And so I did a little bit of training in the last month, and I picked up my speed. And I'm going to do that before I go to Harding Park.
You better.
I'm never going to swing the club. Never going to swing the club at 105 miles an hour. But you know what? If I could just hit that century mark just once, I would put it all over Facebook.
You know, the big question, a lot of questions out there too about it is it sustainable? You know, what he's doing to his body and how he's swinging at it and the torque he's putting on his lower body when he's hitting it. Is that sustainable for a long period of time?
I don't believe so, but time will tell. You know, I think guys are thinking about their careers in terms of maybe 5 to 10 years. I don't think anybody on tour anymore is thinking about a 30-year tour
That's
career.
True.
And you take a look at Matt Wolf, you know, he's 20 years old, 21 years old. And, you know, where's he going to be when he's 25? Where's he going to be when he's 30? I don't think he's even going to be around when he's 35 or 40, because I just don't believe the body can sustain that. Either that, or he's got to reinvent himself and let his golf game and his career evolve. Now that can happen. I mean, you're seeing it with Tiger Woods right now. Tiger used to be the longest. Now he's, you know, in the top 50 to 75 longest, right? But you can still play great golf hitting it as far as Tiger Woods is hitting it. And so it's just all relative. And I think whether you're the average golfer looking to get faster and stronger or whether you're a tour player, you just have to kind of keep things in perspective of what you're doing. And that will help you to manage what you do and when you do it and how much you do. You know, DeChambeau is going for broke right now. And personally, I don't think that's sustainable. But he might get to a point where he knows he can't go any further, and then it's a matter of managing things. And then you get into the whole, I need to manage my body from being injured, right?
Right.
But I don't think that you can go at the pace that he's going for a career. You can certainly make your point. You can certainly make the improvement. And then you can certainly manage it and be a great player. I mean, right now, arguably, he's the longest. The absolute longest, but he might not be able to sustain that for, you know, a long period of time.
Well, if anybody knows anything about sustaining a golf career, Jeff, it's you. And so we want to congratulate you again on more victories. So very quickly, JR, good luck today at Wingate. And how do people, you're still giving lessons out at Boyne. How do people get a hold of you and set that up?
Yeah, well, there's a couple ways of doing it. I mean, they can always call up there to the Ross Golf Center, or they can just get on a digital platform that we use called YouSchedule. Look me up and set up some time, and I'm happy to help anybody that comes along.
Jeff Roth, thanks so much for joining us on Finding Fairways. We'll be back in touch with you shortly.
All right. Thanks, Jerry. Thanks, Kevin.
You bet. Take care.
We'll be back after these words from our fine partners on Finding Fairways, brought to us by CarlsGolfland.com. Brought to us by CarlsGolfland.com. Jerry Coyne and Kevin Frisch in our Grayling studios. And on the phone, golf scribe from the Milwaukee Journal, Gary D'Amato. And Gary, obviously the most unusual of circumstances that we could have ever anticipated on the PGA Tour. Front and center has now emerged Bryson DeChambeau, and I don't even know how you put it into context with anything we've seen before.
You know, I don't know that you can. It's funny, I interviewed Gary Player at the Masters about 15 years ago, and he said, you know, someday a player's going to come along, he's going to hit the ball 400 yards. And I kind of chuckled, and he said, I'm dead serious. It's going to happen, mark my words. Well, DeChambeau isn't at 400, but he's inching close. He's caught the tour flat-footed with what he's done, I think. And he's certainly making other players look around and wonder if they should maybe change their approach a little bit. He's obviously, he's very intelligent and thinks long and hard about what he wants to do with his game and his body. And, you know, bulking up the way he has and hitting the golf ball, the distances he's hitting it, it's almost scary what he's doing to golf courses right now.
Kevin and I were talking yesterday when we were trying to set up the show, and thanks for joining us at short notice. The list of players who have decided to try to get longer and ruin their games is quite lengthy. I can't think of anybody else that has done anything even close to what Bryson is doing.
No, you're right about that. It's it's a calculated gamble. I think anytime you talk about putting on bulk, putting on muscle, and doing speed training to try to get the maximum you can out of your body, you're taking your body to the edge, and you wonder about, with the power and the torque he's generating, if his body's going to hold up in the long run. Nobody's ever swung as hard as he does, you know, on the tour anyway, and has lasted a long, long time. So that remains to be seen. Steve Stricker, I talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and a week ago or so, he played a practice round with Bryson and was amazed at what he's done. But said, you know, Bryson told him, I've had to back off on trying to hit it so hard because I saw signs that my body was breaking down, and I had to rebuild the other half of my body. One half got stronger than the other half. And he's messing around with stuff that few people have in golf, and it's really interesting to see what he's done, though.
It will be interesting to see if it's sustainable. And I was reading this morning that Caesars has DeChambeau as the favorite at the Masters. It'll be interesting to see how his game is going to be at the majors. Gary, I mean, what do you think? I mean, Harding Park, Wingfoot, and then Augusta National.
Well, it's interesting because he's played great at two tight courses, you know, Colonial and Arbor.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're certainly as tight as major championship venues, though not as long or as difficult. I think his length sets up really well for the Masters. I mean, because he's pretty straight, too.
Yeah.
For hitting at 350, he's hitting fairly straight.
That's been the most
Masters,
impressive.
You know, has those pretty wide fairways. So, you know, when he has wedges in all the par fours at Augusta National, maybe they're going to have to Bryson-proof it at some point.
Well, I'm sure Tiger is looking at some of this footage right now, and I don't think he's going to try to get back in the gym and get any longer. He's already gone through all that. Even when Woods muscled up and everything else, his driving became way more erratic than what we're seeing with DeChambeau.
Yeah, it did. Yes, Tiger was demonstrably longer than anybody else in the early 2000s. Could hit it 30 or 40 yards past people. And that's kind of what Bryson is doing right now. Stricker said in that practice round, DeChambeau was 50 to 60 yards longer than him. And, you know, Steve's 53. He doesn't hit it great distances, but he can move it up there 310 when he needs to. And
wow.
To see somebody else's ball in the fairway 50 yards ahead of yours, you know, it's a wake-up call.
There's no doubt. I was talking to Kevin. I know the course that they played on, Detroit Golf Club, very well. My dad was a member for a long, long time. And the drive that he hit on number 18 is just insane by any stretch of the imagination from any even great golfers, big, huge hitters that I know at Detroit Golf Club. So it's taken the tour by storm, and I guess we'll see if somebody or a couple other – I mean, Rory McIlroy, I'm sure Rory and DJ probably aren't that concerned about it, but anybody else that's not hitting at 300 has got to be pooping in their pants.
Well, you know, a nod goes out to Webb Simpson, who's not a bomber, but has played well and is really one of the hottest players in the world right now. And he's got more of an old-fashioned approach, I guess, to golf. But that goes to show you that there's still room for those guys.
Yep.
He's putting it great, and obviously he's winning, has won. So there's still room for the guy who hits at 295, 300, but those guys who hit at 350 have such a big advantage now.
Well, especially they play these shorter courses, right, Kev?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they start playing these shorter 7,000-yard, 6,900-yard courses, and it's a huge advantage.
Yeah. Gary, a couple quick questions for you. Do you know what they're doing this week as opposed to next week? We've never seen this before, playing the same venue 2 weeks in a row at Memorial. They have this event, the workforce event, and then next week they're having the actual Memorial tournament. How did that come about?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've heard that they're a little worried about the course getting beat up a little bit, so they're, for this workday tournament this week, they're moving a lot of the tees up, though, so the teeing grounds don't get chewed up, and so the divot, you know, patterns are in different places. So
that makes sense.
It'll be interesting to see what happens to the golf course and to the scoring, you know, the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I thought that was strange. I was listening to some PGA Tour radio interviews yesterday, and they started making references to the Memorial this week or next week. And I said, wait a minute, they're there this week. No, next week. Very confusing. It is a compact schedule coming down the end with three majors in basically, 8 weeks?
Well, they took out the Ryder Cup, so that
Right. It
was really compressed then. You had the U.S. Open and the Ryder Cup in the following week. That would have been very interesting. Gary D'Amato, thanks so much for joining us on Finding Fairways. How do people follow you? I'm assuming you're on Twitter or you have some other social media outlet?
Yes, I'm on Twitter, at Gary D'Amato Golf. And but primarily, I am writing for a website now, wisconsin.golf. That's all you have to plug in your browser, wisconsin.golf. It'll take you to our site. And we're getting about 150,000 page views a month now.
Wow.
We've got a nice staff and doing some nice things. And I don't know of any other state that has a website like ours. So check it out when you get a chance.
We will do that. Gary D'Amato, thanks for joining us here on Friday Face Off, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. It's time for us to check in with our good friends at Boyne Golf. I've got Ken Griffin, the director of golf marketing, on the phone with me. Ken, thanks so much for the great hospitality at the Alpine on Sunday. The course was just in amazing shape, and luckily there was a cart girl out there to keep us beveraged.
Well, we're trying to keep the carts wet and the guests wet all at the same time, Jerry. Our guys are doing an amazing job considering. I mean, it's been great to play, but boy, it's been a struggle to keep it in good shape. But I think our guys have done a great job, the supers and their crews.
I'm sure they're pouring a lot of water on the golf course because it looked perfect. So it's a good time to get out. You sent me some deals that you got going on. Unlimited golf on the Alpine Monument and Crooked Tree. What a deal that is.
Yeah, we've got a golf pass. So it's those three courses the entire month of July. Saturday is the only day that's blacked out. So it's Saturday through Friday after 11 o'clock. It's $550. It's unlimited rounds for the month.
Yeah, if you're a golfaholic, guys and gals, that is if you can get like 20 days of golf in, you're going to get that card worn out.
It takes about 5 days to make your back off of a normal average tee time there. So it's a win-win. And, you know, even if you don't want to buy the pass, if you can't play that much, we've got daily doubles. So it's two rounds, Sunday through Thursday, starting at like 1:15, or Friday and Saturday, 1:55. So, I mean, it's 36 holes. A daily happy hour tee time start at $56, and
wow,
that's after 5 o'clock. So some great deals out there.
There is, and you still got some stay-and-play specials going on as well.
Yeah, if you just want a single night, it's a stay-and-play. We've got specials there the month of July, and we've also got our seems to be our most popular, and I don't know if it's, you know, as we're coming through COVID, you want to get as much golf in as you can in just a couple days. But it's a two-night and four rounds, and those start at just $236. You know, as always, you can check it out at BoyneGolf.com, but you can also check out our social media pages, and it's wherever you want to be, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, you name it. However you like to consume it, we're going to try and put it where you want to see it.
Well, you are putting it all together there at BoyneGolf.com, and like you said, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Thanks, Ken Griffin. We'll see you out on the golf course. That's going to do it for this episode of Finding Fairways, as we like to say. Find a fairway of your own, stick a peg in the ground, and pound it down the middle. This was pre-recorded and a production of Barney Stone Broadcasting. We'll see you here on this station next week.